And if you can only afford hyper-processed food, ultra-processed food, that's what you're going to get. If you move up the economic ladder and you can afford fresh fruits and vegetables and so on, they'll be there for you. There's no such thing really as a food desert. There are only parts of the country and parts of different cities where there aren't enough people for money with money for supermarkets to justify operating in those places. Supermarkets per se are agnostic. Food producers even are agnostic. They're not racist or anti-poor people. They just go where the money is, and the money is where wealthy people are.
That's what a system is, absolutely. Tell me, do you find anything interesting or attractive in the notion that agriculture could be organized as worker co-ops rather than as profit-driven, hierarchical, capitalist enterprises?
I do, but I think that's down the road a bit. And I think what we need to talk about, the two issues we need to talk about before that can happen are what reparations really means. I mean, I know you know this, but it's always worth saying that most of the land in the United States was appropriated, stolen from indigenous Americans, indigenous people who lived here. And then that land was redistributed to mostly white European males. And that was what the Homestead Act was. So we have an unequal and unfair distribution of land, which is a great source of wealth in the first place. So how do we repair that damage? And what do we do about the existing lands? How do we do what amounts to land reform to try to get land into the hands of people who will work it cooperatively, who will farm it for mutual benefit, who will farm it and steward the soil and the rest of our important resources? That will, I think, be a cooperative venture, but we have to first make reparations. We first have to do land reform, and we have to have good examples of what cooperative ventures mean in other spheres.
Very well said, Mark. Thank you very much. I wish, as always, that we had more time, but I really do encourage people to go get a copy of Animal Vegetable Junk, and you'll get a lot more of the wisdom of Mark Bittman that way. Thank you very much, Mark, and I look forward to the next time we can have lunch together.
Me too, Richard. Thanks for having me on.
My pleasure. And to all of my listeners and my viewers, I hope you found this as interesting as I have, and I look forward, as always, to speaking with you again next week.
Hey, are you a WBAI member who wants to vote in the ongoing Pacifica Bylaws referendum but have not received your electronic ballot by email? If so, please go to elections.pacifica.org and fill out a ballot request form, or call and leave a message for the election supervisor with your name, home address, email, and phone number at 510-993-0320. The deadline to request paper ballots is June 25th, and the deadline to request electronic ballots is July 6th. All votes must be received before 11:59 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on July 7th. For more information on the bylaws referendum positions, please find the 2021 Bylaws Voter Guide at elections.pacifica.org.
The previous program was Economic Update with Richard Wolf, heard Wednesdays at 6:30 p.m. right after the WBAI Evening News. Stay tuned for Off the Hook. It is now 7 p.m.
And this is radio station WBAI New York, located in the middle of the FM dial, 99.5 FM. It's 7 o'clock. It's Wednesday. It's time for Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself off shaving, now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse, but if they could, they would. Only live on for the best, expect the worst. I hope that's understood, but maybe no.
and a very good intro by the program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, joined tonight by Kyle.
Hello.
Alex, where'd you go? There he is. Okay. I'm looking at an empty chair. Alex, welcome back to your chair.
Good evening.
Rob T. Firefly.
Good evening.
And Gila.
Good evening.
Well, I'm glad we're all here. You know what a week from the day after tomorrow is? Anybody care to guess? Gila, it looks like you know. No?
No, a week from the day after tomorrow is July 1st.
Well, no, actually it's July 2nd, but that's okay.
Oh, right, yes,
because
sorry.
June
sorry,
doesn't have 31 days, as some of our representatives seem to think. But a week from the day after tomorrow is a week from Friday, and that would be the first Friday of July, the first Friday of the month, being traditionally the day that 2,600 meetings happen but have not happened for the past 15 months or so because of this damn pandemic. But we are starting tentatively to have meetings again, beginning with July 2nd. We have heard from a few meetings that will be starting up. I think we're going to have maybe half a dozen, far cry from what we have had in the past, obviously. But what we're doing is we're having meetings in places where the vaccination rate, where people are completely vaccinated at a level of 40% or above. So while the United States qualifies, we're at like 45%. New York qualifies. A bunch of places don't, however, and it's for everyone's safety that we have to have some line that we don't cross. So if you've reached out to us, we will get back to you. You can go to 2600.com and go to the meeting section. I think, 2600.com/meetings will get you there. You can email meetings at 2600.com. You can tweet to 2600meetings. But basically, we will begin phasing them in starting next, or a week from this coming Friday. We're only going to be adding the meetings that we have contact with. We won't be automatically re-adding your meeting if nobody says anything to us. So we're starting from scratch. So it's going to look like we have only a handful, because we only will have a handful. But it'll build from there. And again, if you're in a place where it's below 40% of fully vaccinated people in the population, don't fret. You'll get there eventually. But we can't have meetings safely until we reach that particular plateau, that level. Any questions from our in-studio audience? Rob?
Just a point of clarification for those of us in the New York City area who would like to go to the New York City meeting, and that is that we have still not completely nailed down the location. We are going right up to the line with this, but it's a matter of just confirming that a place that is available for us to get to will be open and functioning as a public space. So we've got some more phone calls and people to pester and get some answers, but keep an eye on nyc2600.net or nyc2600 on Twitter for updates on that.
And just to give an example as to how even-handed we are applying this policy, the New York City meeting will not be listed if we don't hear back from them as far as where this is going to be. And a certain amount of time before that Friday comes. What I suggest, Rob, though, is I know that we're dealing with, the Citigroup Center is where we originally were. They're renovating. Mm-hmm. We moved over to the atrium half a block away. Now, apparently, they're renovating. Has mm-hmm. that been verified that they are renovating, in fact? Because I went to their website. I didn't see any mention of it.
Yeah, it's been verified in person that they're okay. Still renovating. It's not known if they're going to be open in any capacity by the time we need them. So,
well, here's what I suggest. If they're renovating, you all can meet outside, in that little courtyard area.
Absolutely.
And it's safer, actually, to be outside than inside for those people that are concerned about lingering viruses. And that's just a good starting point anyway. So if that's the information that we have to go on, we're happy to spread that information around too. So that goes for any meeting too. It does not have to be in the place that it was at before. It can be outdoors. We encourage that. It can be someplace else, perhaps more spacious. It can be in a whole different place. It can be a whole different meeting too. If you're starting a new meeting, you're welcome to contact us as well with that information and we'll treat you as if you had had a meeting for 20 years. It's not a big deal. And on the issue of vaccinations, we obviously prefer people who are vaccinated come to the meetings. But we are not going to be asking for any kind of proof of that, and neither will anybody else at the meetings. The reason for that is nobody runs the meetings. The meetings run themselves. So nobody is in charge. Nobody's going to come up to you and demand to see your ID or any kind of information that proves that you're vaccinated. We ask that you do the responsible thing and only come to a gathering of people while a pandemic is still raging across the planet if you're vaccinated. And if you're not, wait until it completely goes away or until you decide to get vaccinated. I don't think we can be any fairer than that.
Absolutely. I think that's completely fair. And also, it's a fact of the meetings that they take place in a publicly accessible space where, you know, you don't need permission to be as such. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point, Rob, because some meetings do take place in hacker spaces, which can have their own rules. We kind of turn a blind eye to that. We prefer that they be in public places because of exactly this kind of thing where there is nobody in charge. You put it in a hackerspace, well, then people are in charge because there are people in charge of the hackerspace. It's, you know, a kind of an uneasy balance, but it's worked up until now. I'm worried that there might be some issues. So let's try and focus on public places as much as possible so people feel comfortable and so that we are introduced to more new people, hopefully, too. Again, 2600.com/meetings, 2600 meetings on Twitter, email meetings@2600.com. And we'll talk about it more next week.
And the whole point is to be able to meet and come back and meet regularly. So we don't want to have anyone feel unwell or uncomfortable. So if you are unsure or want to take precautions, you know, do that too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just as you would ordinarily in a public space right now, depending, of course, on your region and area.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to wear a mask, that's fine. That's perfectly okay. I know many places now are saying you don't have to wear a mask, but whatever you're comfortable with, that's the important thing. We're only having meetings in places where it's been deemed safe to meet with people without a mask on. So that's perfectly acceptable as well. But again, that 40%, we have to maintain that. And we'll keep an eye on what's happening. And hopefully this is a step back towards normalcy. And we'll see what happens in the months ahead as we prepare for Hope next year and all kinds of other things. But I'm encouraged. I'm encouraged where we are. Country won't hit 70% of the at least one shot by July 4th, apparently, which is a shame. Really should be able to do that. It's not that difficult. And I think, you know, especially young people, if you're out there and you're hesitating, you really ought to make the move and do what's right. Because while you might be able to get through this easier than older people, you still could infect older people who are not vaccinated for one reason or another, or even people who are vaccinated, because it is only about, what, 90, 94%? So that means there is a percentage where it's not effective. If we all do the responsible thing, we will get through this a lot quicker. Yes, Alex.
On that note, I don't know if you guys saw this because you're not in the city, you know, all the time, and certainly haven't been that regularly.
You don't know where we are. You do not know where we are.
Oh, I do know where you are.
Yeah, turn around.
Turn around?
Yeah, turn around.
That's what you said.
Yeah. Hi there. Yeah.
Okay, no, there we are.
You don't know where we are. You really don't. But go ahead.
I guess that could just be a familiar background, mm-hmm. right? You know, one of these pseudo-Zoom backgrounds or something.
Nothing for granted.
We've learned a few things, you know, in the last...
We've gotten really good at some things.
Yeah, the last couple weeks, couple months.
Well, that's good. You got to strive to be a lifelong learner. I'm glad for both of you on that front.
Mm-hmm.
But in any event, what I wanted to say was I got an interesting text message today from the city of New York about vaccines. And apparently, you know, and I signed up for this COVID text messaging list last year when things were going crazy. But now, apparently, anybody, any resident of the city of New York can request an at-home vaccination appointment. you can just call up and somebody comes to your house and vaccinates you. And what's more is you get to choose whatever vaccine you want.
So oh, neat.
You
have wow.
between Pfizer, Moderna, uh-huh. or Johnson & Johnson. You can specify. Just pretty awesome.
Is this only in New York City, or is this throughout New York or throughout the country?
I think it's only the city of New York, unfortunately.
Well, this is great for people who are shut-ins or people who can't get away for one reason or another. Keila?
But now, if you can order your shot, will they, like, bring you a sandwich, too?
No, wow. I feel like...
That didn't take long, did it?
I feel like this is an ice cream truck sort of territory.
I just hope maybe. That we don't see a prevalence of vaxxing, you know what I mean? Where it's like swatting, where you send mm-hmm. a vax team out to somebody who doesn't want it, and they have to deal... No, why do I think about this immediately? But I just hope they have some security precautions that prove that you are in fact the person requesting this. Otherwise, it could get very unpleasant very quickly.
Well, it could. There is supposed to be a confirmation phone call that is given to the person who is going to be potentially vaxxed in order to confirm dates. And it does seem like they're anticipating some kind of backlog for this because they said it may take a couple of weeks after you fill out the form online in order for somebody to call you back.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess the way around this from a security perspective, though, would be if you were going to vax somebody like you were swatting somebody, you would probably provide a bogus Google number that belonged to you and not to the other person who was that you were vaxing, so to speak.
Yeah, so that really wouldn't do much good, would it? Because they verify the number that you give them, and of course that's going to work out.
You should really.
That's right.
I would focus on doing this for people that are just basically having trouble with the process itself and actually do want help with it. It just seems like a lot of work.
And, you know, I guess if somebody visits a house and with a vaccine, it's not the worst thing in the world. It's just a waste. But please, people, don't do that.
They're perishable, I think.
Well, yeah, but yes. I mean, it's better than having a team of armed men kick down your door because it's harder to back out of that gracefully. And get on with your lives. So, yeah, this is a good thing, and hopefully it spreads throughout the country and people are able to get vaccines delivered to them if they're not able to go out and get them themselves. It's a pretty good idea, I think. Yes, go ahead, Gila.
I was going to say that the whole thing is fantastic. I was just looking at the sign-up form, which says we're going to forward this information to all the various city organizations, the departments that are going to coordinate on this. So it may take a few weeks for you to get a phone call. So if you tried to set this up for someone else, besides all the fail safes, I think it would just be a very sort of delayed prank.
Oh, you'd have to play the long game on this.
You really do. You really, really do.
Okay. I'll stop thinking the worst of people and just assume that everyone is going to be responsible. Why am I doing this again? I always get disappointed whenever I do this. Fingers crossed. I hope it works out. I hope more people get vaccinated. I hope we reach that 70% and we get on with this already. That's my hope. Mm-hmm. Alex, did you have something?
Yeah, this gives me, I think, you know, great hope, especially walking around the city and walking around Manhattan over this past week has been really incredible, too, because there are just so many people out on the streets again. And a lot of people outside, I would say most of them aren't wearing masks right now. We've got a lot of people that are vaccinated, still going inside stores and whatnot. People should be wearing masks. But the city on the whole, I think, feels like an entirely different place than it did 6 months ago. And it's in large part because of the vaccination efforts that have been
But it's exclusively. I mean, what else could it be? Obviously, that's the reason why it's now safe to walk around. And it is safe to go in places without masks, depending on what their policy is, depending on where you are in the country. Because I've seen a number of places that are allowing that now. So it's, you know, I was in the supermarket the other day, and only a couple people were wearing masks. And I think if you're not vaccinated, the responsible thing to do is continue wearing a mask. And if you're not, well, it seems like it might be okay inside. And it is certainly okay outside.
In terms of progress, though, I mean, again, this is just incredibly great hope. Because remember, just a few short months ago on this very program, we were talking about some of the domains that I had identified that were promoting at-home vaccination for a fee that were entirely, you know, 100% scams. Now here we are dealing with at-home vaccinations for residents of the city of New York, and that's the reality of all of this. We've come a huge way in a very few short number of months. And I think this is this is a pretty amazing feat for the city of New York to have accomplished.
Well, what are the domains that were scams? What are they doing now? Because it's no longer a scam. So I feel bad for them. What do they have on their websites?
Well, we'll have to take a look at those again. I don't remember them off the top of my head, but if I can find some of them during the show, we'll revisit those during
and
overtime.
How did you know they were scams before they actually did anything? Can you tell by the name somehow?
You could tell by the names. You could tell by the domains, the registration information, the setup of the page, as well as the 800 numbers that were associated with these particular services.
How does any of that indicate that they're scam artists?
Well, you could see this replicated across other domains that also were used as part of either disinformation fraudulent, or the domains were registered by a network of squatters or threat actors that were looking to capitalize on vaccination efforts. We can group those types of registrations together and find clusters of domains that, you know, obviously belong to the same network or same group of bad actors. So there's lots of different ways, and also just looking at the content. You know, the content itself, even though I think the copy was pretty well written, the content itself was pretty janky and looked a lot like a scam. And you can see these things materialize if you track them over time.
And when you say they're bad actors, obviously something has to tell you that they're bad actors. Is it because of something they've done in the past? Is it simply because of the way they're phrasing things? What is it that tips you off on that?
Well, it looks like they're trying to exploit people, right? They're trying to steal money. You know, they were asking, I think it was something like $100 or $500 for a home visit for a vaccination at the time when that just did not exist. They were looking to either steal credit card numbers or steal actual funds at that particular time. So that's why I'm talking about they're bad actors because they're fraudsters.
Interesting. There might be a whole bunch of new domains that are being taken over now since this has become reality. But hey, let's move on to some of the bit of news, because there is a little bit of good news. Sometimes we do have good news. We try not to give too much of it, but occasionally it just overflows. Connecticut has become the first state to make all prison phone calls free. Yeah, imagine that, free. Not an incredible amount of money, not even what a regular phone call costs, but free. This addresses one of the biggest emotional and financial burdens faced by incarcerated people and, of course, their families as they merely try to stay in touch. The bill was signed into law by Governor Ned Lamont on Wednesday, last Wednesday, I believe, and could go into effect as early as July. That's according to supporters. It allows anyone who's incarcerated a minimum of 90 minutes a day of free calls. Democratic Representative Josh Elliott, one of the supporters of the legislation, says we're on the right side of history. Corporations can no longer be allowed to exploit the love between incarcerated people and their families. Not in our state, not on our watch. And I think that is an important thing to point out. If you are going to get arrested, make it Connecticut, because that way you're assured that you'll be able to make a free phone call, because this isn't true in New York. It's not true in other states. And you have to ask yourself, who would be against this? I mean, I know who will be against this. The same people are against everything that makes sense. But simply talking to people, why would we want to forbid that? Yeah, punishment. I get it. But their families and everybody that is connected to them in some way, communication is important. And when you make that, and this is something that I know well, because I've talked to many people who are behind bars, the whole Kevin Mitnick saga, Bernie S. saga, all kinds of people that needed to reach out and convey important messages or just find out certain things for themselves and stay sane, cost a fortune. It cost a hell of a lot of money just to make contact, just to say a few things. And you are always cut off, which is still going to be the case, obviously. You are listened in on, still going to be the case. But to make it so prohibitively expensive for people that probably are the least able to be able to afford something like that. And I'm talking about the families of people of the incarcerated. We're talking $5 a minute in some cases. It was highway robbery. That was the crime, as far as I was concerned, seeing how these companies just swooped in and took advantage of these people. So it's great to see us doing the right thing. Now, Connecticut is joining several jurisdictions nationwide that have taken steps to make prison and jail phone calls free. That includes New York City, San Francisco, San Diego, Los Angeles. So New York City, at least, is taking steps, but not New York State. This historic legislation will change lives, said Bianca Tylek, who's the executive director of Worth Rises, which has been working with local advocates, many of whom were directly impacted, to slash prison phone costs. It will keep food on the table for struggling families, children in contact with their parents, and our communities safer. I see no bad in this. Rob, you?
Yeah, I mean, people have, people who haven't had direct interactions with the prison system, or had a friend or a family member or someone they care about in prison and wanting to communicate with them, might not be aware at just how predatory the entire business model around prison phone calls has built up over the decades. That is the one place. I mean, we live in a modern era now where phone calls in general, even long distance ones, even international ones, are basically cheap as free. Prison phone calls are the last remaining bastion of really getting exploited, really getting charged unreasonable amounts for phone calls. And if you've got someone you communicate regularly with who has been incarcerated, that is a major pull on your budget, and that is also disproportionately affecting people who are poor, who don't have the means to pay for calls like this. So it's really a major injustice that's being addressed here, and it's way overdue.
Yeah, and I know people are concerned with planning crimes from prison and things like that. Keep in mind, all these phone calls are still listened in on. So actually, if crimes are being planned, if that scenario actually plays out, kind of doing a favor to law enforcement, aren't they, by giving out information? So I don't think that is a valid concern. I think keeping people in touch is always a good thing. And as, a phone freak, somebody who back in the 80s was just trying to get free phone calls everywhere when it cost a fortune to call New York City from Long Island, let alone to call overseas. Now you can call everybody. You can talk to anybody around the world for nothing. We won that battle. And it's incredible. And somehow, the very companies that were screaming bloody murder whenever people used a red box or a blue box or something to get around the system, those same companies are doing better than ever. So when the corporations say that stealing their services is going to put them out of business, not necessarily true. They will find a way. They always do. And I think that's true of every communications company.
And the corporations themselves are much better able to absorb the costs than individuals who may have other debt obligations and, as we said, maybe disproportionately burdened by other socioeconomic factors. So
absolutely,
it's really cruel.
Hey, I wanted to ask you guys, because you're in the city, and we're somewhere else. We still don't know where we are, but we're somewhere else. But you're in, Alex, I know you're not in the city right now, but I know you came from the city. You guys vote in the first election that used it's not multiple choice, it's
ranked choice.
Ranked choice, where you get to choose five candidates in order. And if your candidate doesn't win, well, then your second vote gets counted. And it's really a very democratic system. In fact, here at Pacifica, we've been using that system for a while, and it's come in very handy. It's very effective, and it reflects the mood of the people. But did you guys take part in this?
I did. I went and I voted last night at the high school, which is our polling place. Mm-hmm. And I texted Rob because our precinct was the only one that had a line, and I found out why. Because one of our precinct captains was explaining the ballot to everyone. She said to me, "Do you know how to do this?" And I said, "Yes." And she explained it to me anyway.
Wow.
Yeah.
So one precinct captain can cause a line.
Uh-huh. It was absolutely, it was fascinating. It was, people were more participatory than I'd ever seen them before. People were excited to be there. Everybody was wearing a mask except for the school safety officer, which I just thought was interesting.
Wow.
Yeah. I got my sticker.
Oh, and I've never gotten a sticker. They've never offered me a sticker. I've never gotten one.
I got one when I traded back my privacy cover. the guy at the door said, I'll take your folder and here's a sticker. It was overwhelming. And then I've got mine too. And the thing that was very, very interesting was this morning on the New York Times website, they were able to really break down by precinct how the votes came out, which I thought was absolutely incredible.
But they still aren't able to tell who won.
They cannot tell who the winner is because nobody got the plurality that they needed. But to say, here's how the votes broke, here's how the first choice votes broke, was fascinating.
Uh-huh.
And this little map was so great. And there were precincts where people tied, and there were precincts where one person voted.
Wow.
Which was, yeah. Yeah.
I want to know more about those precincts. I mean, nobody participated except one person?
Well, it's also possible that people were not eligible to vote in the primary. Like, maybe that was an area. This was only the Democratic primary results that we're showing.
Yeah, I would think there's more than one person registered in the Democratic Party in any precinct.
I would think, but who knows? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, there's a little blank spot in Central Park.
Very interesting. So what I'm naive as far as all this goes, but I'm curious, if they're able to tell how the votes came out, how come they can't continue the calculation and say, okay, we cut off the last person. This is how it works. They cut off number five, and then we reallocate the votes based on the second choice and the third choice and the fourth and the fifth, and recalculate. How come that doesn't take a few seconds? Why are we talking about not knowing results until July? I'm sorry, I didn't mean to ask you that, Gila. I'm not saying you know the answer. I'm just it's just a general question.
I do.
Do you know the answer, Alex?
I voted yesterday as well in the West Village. It was great. There was barely a line to get in, you know, but there were lots of people, you know, what is it, 100 yards away or whatever it is, you know, at the end of the block, handing out flyers for all the different candidates. It felt very festive, I guess is one way of putting it.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things in terms of this ranked choice voting, you know, what I'm curious about is people that get the complexity of it wrong, because the ballots themselves were a little bit confusing in terms of ranking. It was very easy, I think, to fill out the same column twice or have, you know, your third choice perhaps, you know, overlap with your fourth choice because of the way in which the columns were set up.
What do you mean overlap? How would that work?
Well, let's say, you know, especially for mayor, right? There were a whole bunch of different candidates. And you're looking farther down the page, and let's say you're a third choice candidate. You want to be, I don't know, Mr. Smith, or somebody, whoever.
It was a good candidate, Mr. Smith. Yes,
but you
he went to Washington.
You accidentally put that in the fourth column, and then you tick the fourth column for somebody else for Mr. Jane or whomever, or Mr. Doe, that was farther up in the alphabet, so he was listed earlier. So what if you have two candidates listed for the same position? What I want to know is what happens to the ballot then.
The ballot's invalid. Well, it doesn't get accepted if you have two filled in for the same rank. You
right,
get it kicked back, and they say, do it right this time. That's what should happen.
Is that right? It doesn't get accepted at the point of the scanning?
When you put it in the little fax machine thing, it's supposed to kick it back if it's filled out wrong.
Is that right?
That's what I was told.
Huh, because that would be very interesting. I wish I knew that, because I would have tried it.
I'm sure you would have, but hopefully you just voted. That's all I'm hoping for.
I just voted, but I would have definitely tried that, because people are undoubtedly going to get confused.
Uh-huh.
And if there's that kind of error correction, I think that's absolutely great.
Well, I think this is one of the reasons why Gila's precinct captain was actually doing a service, because people are going to get confused. They're going to do things wrong. Even if you think you understand it, especially if it's the first time. But guaranteed, the more people do this, the more used to it they'll get, and the more they'll realize this is the way to do it. This is the way to make your vote count more than just yes or no. It's basically, okay, I didn't get my first choice. My second choice now means something, and at least I have a say in that. So I think it's a really, really good step.
Yeah, I agree. You know, the other thing that I think we should all be mindful of, too, is that during this time period where there's so much focus on the primary when it comes to the mayor, there is this assumption that it's automatically going to be a Democrat who wins the actual election.
Okay, 7-1 Democrat versus Republican registration in New York City. It's just, I guess, an assumption. And plus, look at the candidates. You know, okay, I don't want to get insulting here, but fine. Let's assume that, yeah, there's a chance that a Republican could win.
We've had Republican mayors in the past.
We have, and we've learned. We're never going to make that mistake again, hopefully.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, see.
And the reason why there wasn't ranked choice for the Republican side was because there are only two candidates, and it doesn't work.
Right.
It's weird. You would think there would be 50 candidates, but no, only two. And yes, go ahead, Rob.
I empathize with Gila's poll worker because I worked as a poll worker where I used to live on Long Island many, many years ago when electronic voting was still pretty new. And so you had to explain the whole thing to people who walked in expecting the old analog light blue lever-based machines. And as anyone who's worked in like InfoSec can tell you, you cannot over-explain things to people when it comes to using, you know, doing something new, something that, you know, is outside the routine that they've been doing for years and years and years. So I'm sure that it was just automatic to explain it to everybody. I feel left out this time around, though, because I didn't get to vote in this primary because I am not a member of a party, so I have nothing to do with it. But,
and I think that's very unfair that people who aren't members of parties don't get a say in any of these elections. Some states, that's not the case, but it's I'm in the same boat as you. I don't believe in registering with a party, but that locks me out of having any say before actual election day comes around.
Yeah, it's saddening. And also, apparently, you have to be a member of the Democrat or Republican Party to be a poll worker in this city for this election. So I looked into that because I'd done it before. I was thinking, do I want to do it again? But no, I'm apparently ineligible now.
Wow. I don't get that at all. Like, why would you be less eligible because you're not a member of the party? That's it doesn't make any sense.
Well, if you can't vote in it, would they think you would be more likely to cause mischief or I have no idea. It's an interesting question.
Because you think for yourself. They don't want that. Okay. Moving on. This headline, North Carolina 12-year-old's PlayStation account hacked, held for ransom. It's the kind of story you just have to find out more about, right? Why is this a headline at all? I just want to know. 12-year-old's PlayStation account hacked? Really? This is what we care about? Okay, authorities are wasting time on this. In North Carolina are investigating a case of extortion and blackmail after someone hacked into a 12-year-old boy's PlayStation account, stealing his password and locking him out. The boy's mom asked the TV station that's covering this story not to use his full name, but to use his nickname of J-Man. Okay, that won't be hard to figure out, will it? J-Man said he was playing on his PS4 a few days ago when he was suddenly kicked out of his online account. You know, this happened to me on IRC about 20 years ago. I didn't call the cops. I got locked out. And, and people sent me nasty messages and said some very hurtful things. But I didn't call the damn cops, and I wasn't on the news. But I will get even. I'm still planning my revenge. Anyway, he says the alleged hacker. And what does this have to do with hacking? You know, it's, oh my God, that's a whole other issue. He says the alleged hacker then started making demands through Instagram that have gone on for days. Because that's how Instagram works. J-Man said he changed his password, or the hacker changed J-Man's password and the email, so that he wouldn't receive anything about him changing it. Okay, so he changed the password and the email so that he wouldn't get email about him changing the password. Well, good on you, J-Man, for figuring that out without the password or the email. But anyway, just like that, the almost 13-year-old... Wait, why are they calling him an almost 13-year-old when he's 12? Just call him a 12-year-old. He's 12. I mean, that's the whole point. That's the selling point of the story here. You're losing it by changing his age. He lost access to everything on his PS4 online profile. Guys, you know, I have nothing against gamers. I respect them. I am not one of them. I've never been one. I don't understand a lot of what goes on in the gaming world, but if you lose access to your PS4 online profile, is that really a cop calling offense? Is that something that destroys your life? Is it just, you know, an inconvenience, a pain, something you might utter a profanity about, but, you know, can you get on with your life? Or how big a deal is it? Does anybody here know?
I'm imagining there's maybe an aspect to it where if you lose access to your PlayStation stuff, can you still start up your machine at home, put a game in it, and play your own game on your own device? Or are you somehow locked out of this thing that exists in your house as an appliance? It's like, you know, if you get locked out of using your Wi-Fi-enabled clothes washing machine or something.
If you physically have access to it, how could you be locked out of it?
A lot of the games are sent over the internet connection, or however it's connected to the internet, and in that way, the profile is required or is managing
all of
the different games.
That's
Whereas
great.
If you have a physical game, you could use it in the sort of offline way you described.
But you still have the physical device. Can you not tell the internet connection that, hey, I need to reset because I'm who I am and nobody else is, so trust me and not them? I mean, it just seems a very basic thing that should be able to be done. And I know there's issues with saved games and things like that and all the work you've done, but, you know, it's a game, and that's what happens sometimes, and the whole thing is a big game.
Also, well, and on a related note, there's some financial aspect of this, because I think they exchange money for some internal credit system.
Bad idea.
That those sort of games as a service are paid for with.
Yeah, you know, if they had asked me, I would say never have money involved in something that is a game, whether it's Farmville or a PS4 or anything. It's a game. It's a different reality. It should not carry the same price as our reality, because then you'll start mixing it up with our reality. And that's exactly what we're seeing.
Yeah, that's to say nothing of, like, in-game purchasing, which is very common on smartphone games. But, yeah, it really could have been devastating in the moment, but it should not be the sort of earth-shattering, life-changing moment.
I'm reading a news story at nationwide news. TV stations are covering this. The police are involved. It's a 12-year-old who lost access to his PlayStation account. There's something seriously wrong here, and it's not the fact that he got hacked. And he didn't even get hacked. He basically just got his account taken over. There's no real hacking involved here.
Yeah, I guess the question is, how does password credentials get compromised? What was going on in his life, or how they were?
You'll have to ask J-Man that.
I think J-Man has some work to do.
Or J-Man's mom. She might know. Anyway, so yeah, he lost his PS4 online profile. I spent money. Yeah, you're right. I spent money on certain things on the games, like data stuff. Oh, you bought data stuff, J-Man. Well, that's your big mistake right there. Don't buy data stuff with money. No. He said, I've gotten really far into the game, he explained. And right away, the alleged hacker started messaging. Why is he an alleged hacker now? You called him a hacker. So is he? Okay. Well, somebody's messaging him. So he messaged him on Instagram through a profile with no photo and no post, just the name Kevin in the bio section. Really? Kevin again? You got to be Kevin. I haven't spent enough time trying to rehabilitate that name from the evils of hacking with our free Kevin stickers and all that. So now there's another Kevin out there that everybody's going to hate. J-Man said the hacker told him, I want a $50 PS4 gift card. I'm going to use a lot of money on your account, and I'm going to sell it to somebody. Yeah. Wow, this is dark. This is really dark. Gila.
It's really dark. And just to kind of piggyback on what Kyle said there, in-game purchases, I'm sure there's some sort of subscription account situation. There's probably a lot of money sunk into this.
Mm-hmm.
And the kid is 12.
Almost 13.
Which is a very important distinction when you're that age. I used to teach middle school. Take it from me. But also, I think there's a really important, like, the kid is 12, almost 13. If his bike had gotten stolen 25 years ago, the cops would have gotten involved. And I think that's also a piece of it. Like, this is, there's so much identity probably that he has staked on this. I mean, I know it sounds odd to hear it, but also, and especially now hearing what faceless Kevin was saying on Instagram, thank God it was just his account stuff. Like, this could have gotten really, really, really bad.
Yeah, but why? Why could it have gotten really bad? It's because we tie things, we tie our identities to these virtual worlds. It's a big mistake to do that. Now, I had my bike stolen when I was a kid and didn't get it back, but it was a tangible item. I understood. This is now gone. This is not tangible. This doesn't have to happen. With the right kind of security, you can keep this from taking place and basically stake your claim and maintain ownership of the things that you actually bought in the real world with real money. Rob?
This also, it should lead people to start questioning the media environment as it is right now, because this is something that was lost when everything went over to just soft purchases, just like buy software over the internet. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I could start up the Nintendo console I had 30 years ago, put a, you know, cartridge in it, and it works fine. It has nothing to do with, like, other servers being on somewhere. It has nothing to do with, like, social media and people trying to hack at my profile and whatever. And, that's something that exists now in this, you know, child's toy box, basically, in a virtual sense. Where you know, he can't play with the things that that he's been given because of some, you know, social media junk, or because of some bot, or because of some security failure. That's something sad. I mean, if somebody could hack something that, like, took books off your shelf or videos off your, you know, shelf that you enjoyed, you'd be angry as well.
Yeah, absolutely. But I would never have a system like that, and I resent being forced into using those kinds of systems. And we see it all the time with software, where instead of actually having something tangible in your possession, you subscribe to it now. You never actually own it yourself. And that opens up the door for all kinds of compromising to take place, because you don't have full access. Your information is out there. This is the wrong path to go down. Gila?
I agree. And then also, I think things are beginning to go down that path that aren't necessarily completely virtual experiences. Like, what is it? The Peloton treadmill?
Oh, my God. Yeah, that's a great example.
It's going to lock you out unless you subscribe. You can't even use it. Like, this is what we're talking about. You can't start it up and use it.
This big, massive device, this big, massive physical device that you have dragged into your home, capable of killing a small child. Now you're saying we can't even use it. It's going to be bricked. If you don't pay a monthly fee, you just have this useless device in your house. That is a crime. If you buy something, you should be able to use it. And that goes for cars, that goes for computers, that goes for phones. And we seem to be plunging headlong into this world where no matter what we buy, we never actually own it. And somebody else is controlling it. And you have stories like this. You have the J-Man story. You have that happening. It's really sad. There's an update, too. There's another threat from the alleged hacker. If you don't give it to me by this time, I'm going to take it up to $100. And a lot of people want your account. It's very rare and stuff. He's just trying to get a lot of money out of me from my own account. Wait a minute. That's J-Man saying that. I'm sorry. They had two quotes in the same paragraph. J-Man said, he's just trying to get a lot of money out of me from my own account. Yeah. The Charlotte Mecklenburg police report. You got two municipalities in that police department and you're wasting them both. On June 15, list the crimes under extortion/blackmail, as well as hacking/computer invasion. Wow. So a lot of slashes going on here. Charlotte Mecklenburg, extortion, blackmail, and hacking, computer invasion. I don't often, stand up for extortionists and blackmailers, but there's a long history of extortion and blackmail in our country, and this it pales in comparison. It really does. It's one kid taking something from another kid virtually because it was probably extremely easy to do so, and it's being treated like Al Capone, and you have all of this street cred being given to somebody with no actual skills, turning them into a master criminal. And if they are ever caught, that's going to follow them around. And it's a whole other level of wrong that this story now will create. Anyway, this is good news. We're due for some good news on this story. The good news is that J-Man's mom Boy, I feel silly reading this story. J-Man's mom said they were able to pause the credit card attached to his PS4 account so no one can access that money. Okay, Mrs. J-Man, any credit card, you can stop payment on something. This is not some kind of a feat that you figured out. This is what they're supposed to do. And this credit card should not have been accessed by somebody else in the first place. And the moment it was, you call them and you say, hey, this is unauthorized. Stop it. And they will, and you're not liable. That's how it works. J-Man's mom gives advice to other parents. If you want to listen to J-Man's mom's words of wisdom here, consider skipping the online gaming accounts and just stick to buying games in the store. J-Man has made it clear he's not paying up. Well, good for him. Good for your mom. It's nice that you crossed the finish line in the end. But yeah, that is basically the advice I think any of us would give from the outset. J-Man says, if I give them the gift card, what gift card? There's a gift card now.
The ransom gift card.
I didn't know it was a gift card. I thought it was just money.
It was $50 on a, like a virtual
gift card. You're right,
it
was.
Card. Yeah, yeah.
You're really paying attention to this.
It's riveting.
How much do you know?
I know a lot.
Huh. If I give them the gift card, they're not going to give me back my account. They're still going to sell it. Yeah, that's right, J-Man. They're going to sell it. It's just like all these ransomware clowns that think if they give bitcoins to people, all of a sudden they're going to get everything back. You might not. What are you going to do about it? It's, you know, this is part of that history of crime that you can't trust people that commit crimes. It's wise not to do that. J-Man is just hoping to have the account shut down temporarily, effectively sending the hackers back into cyberspace for good. What does that even mean? Back into cyberspace for good? But you want to follow them into cyberspace and get your ass kicked again. The family has been in contact with Sony for help getting J-Man's account shut down temporarily. So far, they haven't had any success. What number you got for Sony, I wonder? Calling Sony? This should be something that's simple. If you have physical access to something that you bought, you should be able to do that extremely easily. You should not have to call Sony. They're probably calling Japan or something, thinking that you have to talk to the president of the company to get this done. And that is the story of the 12-year-old who lost his PlayStation account. Sympathy for him and for others who might be going through something like that, but we need to rethink the way we do things to avoid this. I can only imagine what it's going to be like in 10 years.
This explains where J-Man's been for all the other gamers who missed playing with him.
Speaking of ransomware, you know, we've talked about the Colonial Pipeline ransomware incident many, many times. But do you know that so-called hackers who gained entry into the networks of Colonial Pipeline on April 29th did so through a virtual private network account. And what they did was they used a single compromised password that was floating around on the internet, or if you want to be technical, on the dark net. Basically, it was out there. It was, many people had access to this, and that is how they got in, because this password wasn't changed. It was a password for an account that wasn't even being used, but the account still had access and was still able to do the things they needed to do. It's bad security. It's always bad security. And if you basically deactivate accounts that are no longer used, if you change passwords frequently, you'll tend to avoid this type of thing. And Kyle, you have something else on Colonial Pipeline that I didn't know about?
Oh, sure. This is a WSCO-TV story from Huntersville, North Carolina. Did you know that...
Back in North Carolina.
That's right.
Wow.
Two teens riding ATVs in Huntersville last summer in August.
One of them could be J-Man. Well, he's not a teen yet. He's 12.
Yeah, maybe friends of his.
Okay.
Are credited with finding a massive Colonial Pipeline fuel spill, which was last estimated at 1.2 million gallons. Walker Sell and Owen Fair were riding through Oler Nature Preserve when they smelled an overwhelming odor of gasoline. It was just bubbling up out of the ground like a fire hydrant would, Fair told Channel 9. And basically, this is one of the largest fire fuel spills in U.S. history.
I'd never heard of this. When did this happen?
August.
About a year ago.
Last August, 2020, yeah.
This was before the ransomware. This company was was leaking fuel all over the place, and I guess because they weren't in the news for not having good security on their computer network, the media just skipped over that story. But wow, and you say they weren't able to figure this out themselves. They needed a couple of kids riding bikes to tell them that their fuel was leaking all over the place.
That's right. There was a giant crack, I guess, in the actual line itself, and there was no detection system in any way that the company was aware when it split.
A giant crack in a pipeline, and there's no way to detect that when you're the company running the pipeline.
You'd think telemetrics on like the flow rates and stuff or pressures, you know, because if you have a fire hydrant size leak, I guess the flow of oil to your customers is like that.
I would think that before giving them permission to do that, that's the first question you ask. How do you know if your fuel is leaking? What's your system to prevent that, to detect that? They don't seem to have one. That's incredible.
Yeah. So once they did realize it eventually took time to shut off. But this stuff happens all the time in this country. We have a lot of infrastructure that is old. We have a lot of pipeline systems, and it's generally not covered at all. You get a story that's unusual like this, and it makes local TV, but it's often covered in really sparse ways. So this is why we should look at other pipeline plans like Line 3 and other stuff that is detrimental to ecosystems.
Bad security. It's everywhere. Oh, my God. We're out of time. Boy, the time goes so fast. But we have another hour or so that we spend on YouTube. You can join us there, youtube.com/channel2600, or just click on the link on the top of 2600.com, and you can call us. Yeah, you can call us. The phone number is 321? Is that what it is? I don't have it in front of me. Someone took my paper.
321-HACK.
321-HACK. 802-321-4225. So we'll see you over there, or write to us, oth@2600.com. We'll see you next week on WBAI. Stay tuned to 99.5 FM. Good night. She said, I spotta be the banker, banker, banker. Spotta be the banker. Come and quick, play crown and anchor, anchor, anchor. Play crown and anchor. Switch a man and handle in a tanker. And every ship I carry anchor. Say, what a rude liquor daughter. Tell you, say, we want good behavior. I say, I want good behavior. Spotta be the banker, banker, banker. Spotta be the banker. Come and quick, play crown and anchor, anchor, anchor. Play crown and anchor. Put a man a mantle in a tanker.
And if it's from Jerry Uncle, say what a rude little daughter. Say what a rude little daughter. I think they say I want good behavior. I rest a green report to your mother. I rest a green talk to your father. I say if he answer.
Hello, I'm Jesse Lent. A BAI buddy is a listener who doesn't just give to this station, but spreads their donation out throughout the year to help us plan for the future and take our current programming to the next level. Right now is a special time at WBAI. We've resolved our dispute with the Empire State Building and put ourselves back on track to having a long and prosperous future with a groundswell of grassroots support. But listeners like you are still critical for our survival. Now more than ever, the structured support BAI Buddies offer is priceless. So go to givetowbai.org today. That's give, then the number 2, wbai.org, and become a BAI Buddy. And a big thanks from all of us.
Hey, are you a WBAI member who wants to vote in the ongoing Pacifica bylaws referendum but have not received your electronic ballot by email? If so, please go to elections.pacifica.org and fill out a ballot request form. Or call and leave a message for the election supervisor with your name, home address, email, and phone number at 510-993-0320. The deadline to request paper ballots is June 25th. And the deadline to request electronic ballots is July 6th. All votes must be received before 11:59 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on July 7th. For more information on the bylaws referendum positions, please find the 2021 Bylaws Voter Guide at elections.pacifica.org.
WBAI accepts snowmobiles. If you have a snowmobile, we want it. We also want any extra cars, trucks, SUVs, RVs, boats, and more. Any reason is a good reason to give a vehicle to WBAI. Some do it to avoid the hassles of selling. Some like to skip the costs of repairing, while others just enjoy the good feelings of giving back to their community. But no matter your reason, donating a vehicle to WBAI is a great idea. And it's easy. Here's how it works. Simply call 866-WBAI-CAR. That's 866-922-4227. Or give online at WBAI.org/donate-your-car. Our vehicle donor support team will arrange your free pickup. When the driver arrives to tow away your great gift, you'll receive a donation receipt. Vehicle donations have the potential to drive hundreds and sometimes even thousands of dollars to WBAI. Call 866-WBAI-CAR or visit WBAI.org/donate-your-car.
The election process for becoming a WBAI local station board member has started, and applications need to be submitted by July 14th. So, do you love WBAI shows and want to support the station? Do you have any skills, expertise, or a contribution that might be valuable as a board member for the station? The WBAI local station board members will be available on Zoom sessions to assist you and any candidates seeking information about being on the board or needing guidance in navigating the steps of the election process. Any listener or staff candidate and board members in good standing are welcome to attend. No prior registration is needed. Our own local election supervisor, Renata Siago, will also be attending to help us. Check the Pacifica calendar or the WBAI website for the Zoom access information. You can contact the local election supervisor, Renata Siago, by emailing her at les-wbai2021@pacifica.org. And it is 8 p.m. You're tuned to listener-sponsored, non-commercial WBAI New York 99.5 FM, streaming at WBAI.org. Time now for Exploration with Dr. Michio Kaku.
Welcome. This is Dr. Michio Kaku, professor of theoretical physics at the City College and the Graduate Center of the City University of New York, and this is Exploration. Every week on Exploration, we discuss the fascinating world of science. And today, once again, leading off, we're going to summarize some of the top stories in science and politics. Our lead story today is, are we headed for a new normal? Many people are saying that, well, perhaps the worst is behind us concerning the coronavirus pandemic. Other people are saying, watch out, there's a new variant called Delta, which is much more infectious than Alpha. And Alpha, in turn, was more infectious than the original coronavirus that wreaked havoc on the world. And so what are some of the permanent changes created by the virus? Some people are saying that it's like waking up from a bad dream. And you can't realize that, oh my God, I went through that chaos of the pandemic. Well, it's not over. When historians write the history of the pandemic, they'll talk about the good and bad effects it had on society in general, including exposing the fissures in society. In other words, the coronavirus exposed the divisions of society, the rich versus the poor, and also the plight of minorities. And also, NASA has made it official. The next target is Venus, our twin in outer space. And the question is, why Venus? I mean, it's been 30 years. 30 years since we sent the last space probe called Magellan to map the surface of Venus. Why is the next target Venus? And then we'll say something about the Chinese space program. First of all, we have to extend our congratulations to the Chinese. They successfully sent their astronauts to begin the process of building their own space station. That's right, a space station that is smaller than the International Space Station. But look, let's face it. In 2025, the Russians have stated that they're no longer going to fund their version of the International Space Station, meaning that perhaps it's only a matter of time before the International Space Station comes tumbling down from outer space as it's deorbited and becomes a flaming meteor vaporizing in the atmosphere. Is that the future of the space program? And we'll just say a few comments about the UFO controversy. We know from the United States Pentagon that much of its files concerning these unidentified aerial objects are being released to the public. But on one hand, some people are saying that, well, nothing is really new. That is, there's no smoking gun. There's no startling revelation, something from X-Files. However, when you read very carefully the statements from the Pentagon, you find that there's a sea change with regards to what they're saying now. The military now admits that these objects are beyond our classified and unclassified aerospace ability. They didn't say that before. Before, they were always shy about talking about classified military research, like the stealth bomber. This time, the military owns up to the fact that, hey, these objects, whatever they are, they're not ours. They're not part of any secret classified military program. They have a technology that is beyond what we have. And then the next question is, well, then what are they? And then, of course, space tourism is always in the news because of the fact that the richest man in the world put a seat up for auction, and the seat finally went for $28 million. Think about that. Think of what you can do with $28 million. Think of what society can get with $28 million. And some people are saying, are we going a little bit too far? I mean, space is becoming a plaything for billionaires. And then we'll leave outer space and say a few things about inner space. We'll talk about Alzheimer's disease in today's program. Just realize that pandemics come and go. They're very sharp, they're very abrupt, but they do dissipate with time. However, Alzheimer's is perhaps the disease, not of the year, it's the disease of the century. And there's no cure for it. However, there is a glimmer of hope. As we reported on Exploration, there's new research indicating that certain therapies actually work, at least in the animal kingdom. And so we're going to talk about a new study done at NYU, which gives us hope that one day we may be able to stop the progression or maybe even cure Alzheimer's disease. And before we begin, let me say thank you. Thank you to all you listeners out there who may have picked up a copy of my latest book, The God Equation, The Quest for a Theory of Everything. Because of you, the book sailed on to the New York Times bestseller list, the Amazon bestseller list, and the independent bookstore's bestseller list. So thank you so much if you picked up a copy of The God Equation. And briefly, what is it? It's about the greatest quest in the history of science. The quest to find the ultimate paradigm, the ultimate metaphor, the ultimate equation that allows us to unify all the laws of nature into a single theory. This has been the goal of philosophers, physicists, scientists for, in fact, thousands of years, going all the way back to the Greeks. We think this missing paradigm that eluded Einstein for the last 30 years of his life, the missing paradigm is music. That why do we have so many subatomic particles? Because they're nothing but musical notes on a tiny, tiny vibrating rubber band. And when the frequency of the rubber band changes, the particle changes. That's why we have electrons, neutrinos, protons, quarks. That's why we have the hundreds of subatomic particles that we get by smashing protons apart. We're getting nothing but the different musical notes on a tiny vibrating string. So what is physics? Physics is the harmonies you can create on these very tiny strings. What is chemistry? Chemistry is the melodies you can create when these strings interact with each other. What is the universe? The universe is a symphony of strings. And then what is the mind of God that Einstein eloquently wrote about for the last 30 years of his life? The mind of God would be cosmic music resonating through hyperspace. So if you want to find out more about the greatest quest in the history of science, the search to find the holy grail of the universe, pick up a copy of my latest book, The God Equation, The Quest for a Theory of Everything. Well, let's just jump right into some of the top stories of the past week. Many people are now talking about the new normal, given the fact that some people think we've turned the corner on the coronavirus. Many states, many governors around the country are lifting mandates concerning wearing a mask. So some people are saying, was it all a bad dream? Well, just realize that it was not a bad dream. It could happen all over again. Where do diseases come from anyway? Over 60% of diseases ultimately come from the animal kingdom. For example, take a look at the seasonal flu. That comes from birds and pigs. And so you begin to realize that we live in close proximity to animals like the horseshoe bat. And as a consequence, there are diseases that hop over from the animal kingdom to humans, and it could happen all over again. Now there's a new variant that we have to watch out for called Delta. Delta in turn is more infectious and dangerous than Alpha, and Alpha in turn is more dangerous than the original coronavirus that wreaked havoc back in late 2019. And so some people are saying that, well, the worst is not yet over. But already people are talking about the new normal. They're taking off their masks. They're taking vacations now, and they're spending money like they haven't spent in a year and a half. Some changes are going to be permanent. First of all, we're witnessing the acceleration of the digitization of society. That process was happening anyway with the coming of virtual reality, augmented reality, the dropping of the price of computer chips, the rise of artificial intelligence. That was coming anyway. But the virus basically accelerated the trend toward digitization. And so we have this new calibration of society. How far are we going to go? Well, there's a new calibration coming around. First of all, take a look at the university. My university, the City University of New York, is actually shut down right now. In fact, I can't even go to my office because my office is shut down along with the entire university. So courses are being taught online until perhaps coming the fall semester. This means there's a new calibration. There's a new calibration between online and in-person teaching at the university. A new calibration is taking place. This calibration is happening throughout society. A new calibration between the city and the suburbs. Those people who could afford it, those people who could work online, well, they left.